sit back and relax. It's time to improve your financial lot in life. Produced at CFIS FM Studios in Prince George, this is your tune-up. And here's your host, Deb Ross.
Hello and welcome. I've invited Trevor Slaney. He is a lawyer with Hogue Slaney Lawyers here in Prince George. I've invited him to come and chat with me concerning estate planning. Now, estate planning is probably not the top of mind topic for many people. It's not something that we generally like to think about, and yet so important for us to spend some time planning. So I've invited a specialist, to come and share a wealth of knowledge with us concerning some estate planning issues. Trevor, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Deb. It's my pleasure.
So I guess one of the main components of estate planning would be a will. According to statistics that I had looked at a number of years ago and then revisited them, I don't think they've really changed that much, but about 70% of Canadians don't prepare wills. Is that accurate in your in your experience?
It might be right. It sure seems that way. And I'll never understand why people don't do this. I haven't looked at the statistics in a while myself, but I think they're accurate. Yeah.
Okay. So what are the dangers of not having a will?
If you don't have a will, you've exposed yourself in a lot of different ways. You lose control. You really don't know who is going to step forward and deal with your estate when you're gone. I deal with this every day with my clients, but there are a number of things that are much easier to do in that aftermath, immediate, you know, the work that needs to be done right away. They're much easier to do if you're showing somebody a will that names you as the executor, as opposed to there is no will here, but I'm in the family and everybody wants me to do this, so let me do it kind of thing. So it makes it a lot easier for the people to do that initial work if you have a will. And then there's some other issues that are more specific, but if you have minor children that you want to leave for and you don't do a will, your estate is going to be administered by an agency of the government. It's sort of a corporation that's associated with the government called the Public Guardian and Trustees Office, and they will be administering the estate. And it doesn't matter how much it is, if it's $10 million or $100,000, it's going into the lap of those heirs, not beneficiaries, heirs, at the tender age of 19. And there's no discretion to delay that until you might think they would be mature enough to handle it.
I wouldn't have been able to handle $50 at 19.
No. And I see lots of clients who want to do their planning and their kids are, they're 4 and 6 or 7 or 8 or 10. And I tell them that you're really guessing. You know, most of those people will put trusts in their will on the second spouse to die to the age of 25, but it really is a guess. You don't know. And I want those people to come back and see me when those children are old enough to let them know what kind of young adults they're going to be. And I always tell people, sometimes you can't trust a 30-year-old with a nickel, and sometimes a 21-year-old has it all together and can manage $1 million. And you don't know that until your kids are old enough. So you're really guessing.
I really appreciate what you said about that you'd like your clients to come back so that the will isn't just set up once. That's done. You basically check that off your bucket list no matter what age you are, and you mm-hmm. move on and everything stays the same. Life doesn't just fit in a neat little box like that. It's good to hear that your perspective is to have relationship with people because things change. So how often should a will be updated? Or is there anything that triggers the need for an update?
Well, that's a good point. And to go back to something we talked about just a minute ago, it's an estate plan, a person's plan is about a lot more than just their will. So when I sit down with a client at the first meeting, I'm generally at least 15 minutes to a half an hour. We're just chatting. We're doing what you and I are doing right now. I'm recording some notes. I'm asking very specific questions, but I'm getting to know the people because in order to figure out what's going to happen after a person dies or after a person loses their capacity and needs to be taken care of, which is something we can talk about later if you want, you have to have a good idea of what they own, whose name it's in, how it's structured, how it's set up, because there are several ways that property passes and not just under the will. So you have to have a good handle on all of that. But back to your question about when a will should be updated, I tell clients whenever something major happens in their life that makes them sit down together as husband, wife, or as a mom or a dad and say, hey, this is something important that just happened to me and it's made me think about my life and where it's going or whatnot. Maybe you've had a changed relationship with one of your children. Maybe you've had somebody who you've named in the will has passed away, something like that. Maybe you've won the lottery, or maybe you've come on hard times and you don't have as much money as you once had, because that's one of the factors that I find out before I propose a plan for a client. The plan for somebody with $5 million in their bank account is a lot different than the plan for somebody who has, you know, a house and a pension and a small RRSP. Both are very important plans, but there's some options open to some people that aren't open to others. So when something happens that causes you to think about your life and your planning and your relationships, come and talk to your planning lawyer and say, hey, this is what's happened in my life. Does this necessitate any changes? And it might be some changes to other aspects of your plan, or I might be sending those people off to the financial community to say, you need to go and get one of these. You're not even changing your will,
right,
but you've just thought about your plan again and reviewed your will, and maybe you don't even need to make a change to it. So 3 to 5 years, or when something significant causes you to reassess things.
Those things that you mentioned are fairly common life events.
That cause people? Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, I think that we generally think of them outside of ourselves, but they're fairly common.
Yeah, very much so. I've been doing this for about 15, 16 years here in Prince George. And just yesterday, I dealt with clients that became my clients in 2008. And this is the fourth time that they have revisited and redone their estate plan. Not four different wills, but four different events that have caused them to change some aspect of things. Their life has just changed.
Yes.
And they're just normal, average people. They, you know, there's nothing significant or unexpected happening. It's just four different times they've had to reconsider these things and make small changes. And when I open a file for a planning client, some people might feel like that's the end of our relationship.
Right.
But I don't. That file stays open forever. And I expect to see those people every 3 to 5 years for the rest of their lives. And they should. That's what they should be doing. Some people do, some people don't, but it's getting better.
No, I appreciate your perspective on that. So what about when we hear folks talk about wills and they say, well, I've got something written down and, you know, grandma says it's in my underwear drawer type of idea. What are the pros and cons, and are those wills even legal? Do they stand in Canada?
They can. Are you talking about a holograph will?
Yes. Yeah.
So we don't have legal, actually, when you say Canada, wills and estates are provincially governed, provincial jurisdiction. So a holograph will, for instance, is valid in Saskatchewan. And I know that because that's where I went to law school. I don't have a license to practice in Saskatchewan. I'm only here in BC, but they're not legal in BC. So, and a holograph will is a will that's in totally your own handwriting and signed by you and doesn't have any witnesses. So we never had holograph wills in BC, and we still don't have holograph wills in BC, except certain exceptions, which I'd have to look up to make sure I got this right, but I think they're related to military or people in the Navy, things of that nature. But in any event, our wills here in BC have to do certain things, dispose of your assets and whatnot. They have to be signed at the end of the document by the, I call it testator, but the law now prefers me to use the word will maker, signed by the will maker at the end of the document in the presence of two witnesses who were in the room at the entire time that the will was being signed and who then signed the will in the presence of the will maker. It's not that hard to make a valid, properly valid will. Whether that will does what you need it to do and whether it covers all the assets that will pass when you pass away, and it likely won't. I've seen much more wealth in my 15-year career pass after people die outside of wills than I've ever seen pass inside of wills and inside of estates.
Wow.
So the will is just one part of a plan. You have to have a good sense of everything that you have and how it's structured so you know how people are going to receive your assets, whether it's in the will or not.
Yes. So how easy is it for someone to challenge a will?
Challenging a will. Well, you've got to think about two different reasons for that. So if if you want to challenge a person's will and say, hey, this person didn't have the capacity to sign that document, I know they were incapacitated or they had dementia, I don't think that was their signature. I think this person was tricked into doing this. Then that is challenging the actual validity of the document itself. Anybody who receives notice of the application for probate, which is just the court application that proves that will, has the right to then file a claim in the court and say, hey, this is not the valid will. This is not, this will is invalid for whatever reason. So that's one way to challenge a will, I suppose, to make the executor prove that this will was actually valid and properly signed and whatnot. The other way to challenge a will, I suppose you could say it, is to say this will is valid, but it's not fair. And the only two categories of people who can do that are the surviving spouse of the deceased person or any children of the deceased person. Not stepchildren, not girlfriends and boyfriends, but legally spouses.
What about ex-spouse?
Not ex-spouses. No, they used to have a bit of an overlap in the law before 2014, but then they cleaned that up a little bit. Ex-spouses now have no standing. As soon as you've separated, you could still be married, but if you have, if an event has occurred that has caused an interest in family property to arise, which is essentially the legal separation of you and your spouse. And if you're a common law couple, then it's just the termination of the relationship unilaterally by one person. Then that ends that person's rights to the person's estate. So you're not a spouse anymore then. So ex-spouses don't have standing. Now, proving that the person is an ex-spouse. So I've had some of those interesting situations where the person leaves a will and the spouse is the ex-spouse. They were a common law, so they're in a cooling off period, and one's in one house and one's in the other, but that went on for 3 years, so they're not spouses anymore. But then all of a sudden the person dies and they've got a lot of assets, and the sisters or brothers or children or whatever are waiting to see if this person's going to say, no, wait a second, I'm still a spouse. And then, you know, if you don't have a divorce order or something in writing, then you're always wondering, is this person going to try to convince a judge that him or her is the spouse? So spouses don't have any standing, but proving that a person is or isn't a spouse is sometimes an interesting little dilemma that we have to face.
It almost sounds like you're describing a reality TV show. Your job is not boring, is it?
It isn't. You know, I thought that I was going to be that lawyer who was in court all the time, in complicated litigation. When I went through law school, that's what I was going to be. I was going to be a litigator in court in these big trials, or I was going to be, you know, closing these big commercial and corporate deals. And then I started practicing, and I realized that there's a big bubble of population moving along here, and there's a lot of need for this work, and there's not a lot of people that are doing it in a comprehensive way. And I found that I really, really enjoyed dealing with the people.
Yeah.
You know, there's interesting things.
Yes.
Every estate, no matter how simple it looks when it comes into my office, they all have a twist. My paralegal and I always look at each other and say, this one looks simple, let's wait for it. And then 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, it's a month later. Oh, there it is. There it is.
There it is.
Every estate has a wrinkle, some kind of a twist.
Well, on that twist, yeah, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Don't lose your focus. Tune up with Deb. We'll be back in a moment here on 93.1 CFIS FM.